The Bitcoin Standard Toolkit is a selection of Bitcoin services I recommend to my readers and learners on SaferDean.com as they upgrade their monetary operating system from the fiat standard to the Bitcoin standard. These companies are NYDIG, a leading full-service financial services firm dedicated to Bitcoin, applying institutional wisdom and ingenuity to help clients access the unrealized potential of this emerging asset class. NYDIG offers the full suite of solutions needed for financial institutions to access Bitcoin, including custody, execution, financing, treasury solutions, integration partnerships, and more. The team behind NYDIG brings decades of experience in the financial markets and passion for sound money to help provide the rails that will bring about a move to the Bitcoin standard. I have been working as a consultant for NYDIG for 2 years now, and I'm very impressed with their vision, focus, and execution. Go to NYDIG.com to learn more. CipherSafe. To secure your Bitcoins, it is important to keep your seed phrase backed up safely, and for that, I highly recommend using the CipherWheel Seed Storage Device, a gorgeous and brilliant sturdy piece of low-time preference engineering from a fourth-generation machine shop in Maine. The CipherWheel is machined from solid stainless steel, and its unique and elegant design is inspired by secret decoder rings, as well as legendary mechanical engineer Franz Rouleau and the golden age of machine design. If you've read the Bitcoin Standard, you'll know I think the late 19th century was a golden age for many facets of human advancement because of hard money. Bitcoin is bringing hard money back, and our friends at CipherSafe are giving Bitcoin the low-time preference machines it deserves from the golden age of design. Go to CipherSafe.io to get the CipherWheel for your Bitcoins. OKCoin. Whenever someone asks me how to invest in Bitcoin, my advice is to accumulate Bitcoins periodically for the long run, or what is called dollar cost averaging. When you buy every day, week, or month, you channel Bitcoin's volatility to your advantage. In the long run, this strategy will outperform every other Bitcoin investment strategy, probably, except for amazing luck, perhaps. The best place to do recurring purchases is OKCoin because they have the lowest fees for recurring Bitcoin purchases you will find anywhere. If you're stacking sats for the long run, every sat matters, and the fees with each purchase will add up. That's why I recommend you buy at the lowest cost possible from OKCoin. OKCoin is also the Bitcoin exchange available in the most countries around the world, so it will hopefully be accessible for you wherever you are. Go to OKCoin.com to get started with your stacking. Nodal 1. As discussed in the Bitcoin Standard, Bitcoin is controlled by the nodes that operate its software. It is only through consensus between nodes that the Bitcoin blockchain continues to live, and it is only by running a Bitcoin node that you are part of this consensus and can verify the validity of the transactions you receive and the ownership of your coins. Whenever anyone asks me what are the most important warning signs that something is wrong with Bitcoin, I always answer the following. If the number of Bitcoin nodes is declining, and or the cost of running a node is rising significantly. I believe it is really important to run a node, but I don't recommend running it on your work or personal computer as it can compromise the performance of your computer and, more importantly, the security and privacy of your Bitcoin node. A far better solution is to buy a dedicated hardware node, and for that, I highly recommend Nodal. Manage all your Bitcoin activity, such as Lightning or BTC Pay server, and isolate them from your personal computer by putting them into one dedicated device that is always running and does one thing only, Bitcoin. Become a first-class Bitcoin citizen by running your own Nodal node, available at nodal.it, and that's spelled N-O-D-L.it. Finally, Cold Card. My hardware wallet of choice is the Cold Card. I strongly recommend only conducting Bitcoin trades on computers that are dedicated to Bitcoin and cannot connect to the internet. I like the Cold Card because it is a contained machine optimized for Bitcoin and Bitcoin only. Cold Card is basically a small computer that can only do Bitcoin, which makes securing it more straightforward. Use the code BitcoinStandard on coldcardwallet.com to get a 5% discount.
All right, we are live. Episode 180, Kennedy Financial, the Bitcoin debate. As promised, we have our first guest, a returning guest, Michael Pento. He's a financial advisor, author of the book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. You can find him at pentoport.com. Michael, thanks so much for coming back on KF.
Hey, thanks for having me back on. Looking forward to a very spirited and friendly debate.
Absolutely. His challenger, Professor Saifedean Ammous, first-time guest, assistant professor of economics at the Lebanese American University, author of one of my favorite books of 2018, The Bitcoin Standard. You can find him on Twitter at Saifedean. Saifedean Ammous, thank you for coming on Kennedy Financial.
Thank you so much, Philip, and thank you so much, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to this.
Well, thanks to the both of you for doing this. You don't have to. This is going to be a friendly debate. You are both gentlemen who have tremendous respect for one another. You want to educate people about sound money, free markets, Austrian economics, and that's what we do here on Kennedy Financial. We have a Twitter poll. If folks would like to take the Twitter poll, that's in the description box below. The question is very simple, and it's going to be the first question I pose here to Michael. Michael, is Bitcoin money?
Well, first of all, thank you again for having me on the program. I have tremendous respect. I want to say your name correctly. It's Saifedean. Is that how I say it?
Yes.
Okay. He's obviously much more intelligent than I am. So I'll just get that out of the way right off the top. But listen,
I'm an academic. You're in the real world. So that's not even a contest.
So I come at this from a market strategist and an economist. That's my background. And I run money for a living primarily. So I have to ask myself, although I kind of understand the concept of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies in general, why they were created. It's basically engendered from a hatred of fiat currencies. I totally get it. And they want to exist on this decentralized ledger, one that's immutable and one that's anonymous. That's also makes a lot of sense to me. But here's where it fails. And Phil asked the question. Cryptocurrencies are not money. And the reason why they are not money and never will be is because money must be both two things, primarily. Of course, it has to be portable. That would help. But they have to be rare and virtually indestructible. So this is where cryptocurrencies fail. This is why Bitcoin went from 20,000 to where it's below 4,000 today. There's supposed to be a limited number of cryptocurrencies, correct? Especially Bitcoin, it's 21 million or 22
21 million, yeah.
21 million units. Unless, of course, Bitcoin were to fork or split like an English muffin. This is something that gold could never do. In other words, God exploded stars, created the element number 79 on the periodic table. There's only 118 elements that are stable and atoms in the atomic form. And they're precious and virtually indestructible, only a very small number of these elements. And they're not creating any new ones yet. Bitcoin can split, you can make Bitcoin Cash, you can make Bitcoin Gold. It takes hours to create a new cryptocurrency. There's 1,600 cryptocurrencies out there in the world. There's new ones created every day. And this is why they are not rare. Now, you could come back and say to me, Michael, Bitcoin is different from Ethereum, and it's different from Litecoin, and Bitcoin Cash is different from Bitcoin Gold. And I'm going to tell you, no. These are commodities. They try to accomplish the same thing overall in general, because there's a difference between gold and there's a difference between platinum. But they're the same thing. They're virtually indestructible and very rare elements. So cryptocurrencies in their base form are methods of transacting currencies on this anonymous, immutable, and decentralized ledger. And therefore, they become commodities, and they are not rare, and hence can never be money.
Okay, great. So I have to say this is a good place to start. This is a good argument. But the thing is, Bitcoin and all the others are different from one another in a very similar way in which gold is different from metals, from all other metals. So, nobody says gold can't be money because there are all these other metals out there. Well, you can make a lot of tungsten. Tungsten's close enough to gold. You can make gold coins similar to tungsten. But that doesn't work, right? That's not an argument that works against gold, because at the end of the day, if you wanted gold, you can find out that this is not gold and then you reject it. And then the price of gold continues to be unaffected by the inflation in copper or tungsten. So the same thing happens in Bitcoin. We have to remember, because Bitcoin is the only one from all of these, the only one that can have a chance at becoming immutable is Bitcoin. So all of the rest of them, they're just essentially Ponzi schemes and get-rich-quick schemes, because there's a group of people behind them that can control them, that can change them, that can alter the record. When push comes to shove, somebody out there can change something with all of these other coins. And that is not the case with Bitcoin. As we've seen, Bitcoin over 10 years has kept its main design features. You can still sync the original Satoshi Nakamoto software, you can still sync it up to today's node. It would obviously be very slow and dysfunctional because the code has been improved over the last 10 years, but it is still compatible 10 years later. Now, none of the shitcoins, if you will excuse my language, comes close to having that, because all of them, effectively, after Bitcoin was created, the only reason that any shitcoin ever came into existence is because there was a group of people behind it that were dedicated to mining it, coding it, promoting it, announcing it, putting up stupid advertisements in newspapers and magazines about it, and getting people to talk about it and doing, you know, all of this publicity behind it. And, you know, that's why all of these shitcoins are essentially happy communities of people working together. They're like companies, and there's clearly identifiable figures behind them. Whereas in Bitcoin, if you remember, if you followed Bitcoin in 2017, you would have seen how essentially 90% of the companies in the Bitcoin space, or the most important companies and the biggest companies in the space, and maybe 90% of the most identifiable figures of Bitcoin and people that the public associate with Bitcoin, they all tried to change one small tiny little parameter in Bitcoin's design, and they failed. And it was glorious and it was beautiful. Read about the SegWit 2x story if you're interested in learning more about it. So the point is, that makes Bitcoin different. It's the only one that's truly unstoppable, immutable money. If you have $1 billion in Bitcoin, you can send them to China and there's nobody that can stop you. With all of the other ones, there's a bunch of people that you can put into a room and put a gun to their head and they can figure it out and sort it out. And that's why all of these other shitcoins fork every couple of months. So, and the other thing that I want to add is, when we talk about metals, the reason that gold is money is not because... primarily because it is rare or because it is indestructible. It's rather how the combination of those two things make it money. In other words, titanium and platinum are not money, even though they're both rare and indestructible and expensive to mine. You know, the price of an ounce is around, not the same, but similar to the same sort of price range as gold. Mining one of these ounces of gold, one of these metals. However, the reason neither of these has any real monetary role is because it's not about the rarity. It's about the stock to flow. And I describe this in detail in my book. What matters for money is how much the supply grows year on year as a result of changes in the mining new supply. And so in the case of gold, this growth in the supply is very little, because we've accumulated thousands of years of stockpiles. Because gold is indestructible and we've been mining it for thousands of years, we have an enormous amount of gold stockpiles. And so annual production every year is tiny compared to those stockpiles. In the case of platinum and titanium, because we haven't accumulated production over many thousands of years, it is not that large because they're recent metals. And that's why their rarity doesn't make the money. It's really about the stock to flow ratio. And that's what Bitcoin has. And that's what really secure in the case of Bitcoin. But I don't think it is secure in any of the other shitcoins. And that's why I think it's different.
Michael, what do you think?
Well, I'd like to ask him a question. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask the question, is Bitcoin Cash mm-hmm. and Bitcoin Gold also immutable?
No, of course not. And that's why, you know, I mean, nobody cares to follow, but I think the last time I checked, they were at Bitcoin Cash, which is the most successful of these forks, is at about 2% of Bitcoin's price, or 3% or something like that. And Bitcoin Gold is at about maybe 2% of that. So, I mean, you know, you have to understand, these theoretically started off as being on par with Bitcoin. They were the same thing. But then you move away from Bitcoin's original implementation and you have a bunch of people trying to run a different implementation. And all you have is basically a bunch of people with their own private database. And nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. Nobody needs that. And so that's why all of these shitcoins fail. And so Bitcoin Cash can be changed, and it is changed all the time. And it can hard fork. And it has hard forked several times since they started. And Bitcoin Gold, I don't even think it's functional anymore. It's been attacked several times. So all of these shitcoins, you know, they're completely different from Bitcoin. And that's essentially, I think, a good way of thinking about it is that, you know, Bitcoin is like a space shuttle. And these are cardboard cutouts of a space shuttle. So if you go to the station, if you go to the space station, you know, they have a bunch of cardboard cutouts and they have the actual one. If you haven't really spend time looking at them, you might not distinguish them and you might not be able to tell the difference. But, you know, when it comes to actually taking to the skies, only one of these is going to actually fly. And you know, it may not fly. It may fail. Bitcoin might still fail, but it has a chance. And that's why it's different, really, from all the others.
The other problem with, and I totally disagree why gold is money. Platinum has been used for money for hundreds of years. I mean, you can't say that gold is not both rare and indestructible, and they're not creating any new elements. in the periodic table. You can create new elements in the periodic table, but they're unstable atoms and they fall to pieces. So they're not.
Yeah, but the titanium and platinum are pretty recent metals. They were only really commercial.
But they're still used as money. They still use as money today. The point
they're
is
they're not used as money. Nobody uses them as money.
Yeah, yes, you well. You can use platinum. Platinum rings can be exchanged. They can be transferred. You can buy a platinum ring and it's gold.
Yeah, but I mean the monetary demand for platinum is smaller than 1% of 1% of gold.
But that's not the argument. The argument is, and it's and this is an immutable fact. They're not creating any new elements. But where your argument, I believe, falls apart also with Bitcoin is you say its value in that it's immutable. But then maybe you can speak to us as to why Bitcoin, the Bitcoin community, is seeking to be a regulated commodity. Why does it want to be traded on the CME and the CBOE? Because it must come, and I'll answer the question.
Yeah, sure.
If I may. Because governments really frown on having their money usurped by anybody else. So they to have money be acceptable, it has to be complied with AML laws and KYC laws, know your customer and anti-money laundering laws. So Bitcoin is trying to be both things. It's trying to be a mass adoptive form of money, but to do that, it has to have the blessing of a third party. It has to have the blessing of government. And now you could always tell me, Michael, that's not true. You could, I think you used the example of moving $1 billion to China overnight. It takes very expensive to do that. Takes a lot of time to do that. Bitcoin is a horrible currency. That's why they created Bitcoin Cash, because you just didn't have the throughput in the current system yet. But that was the reason for Bitcoin Cash, because they wanted.
Nah, Bitcoin Cash is a stupid scam. But
anyway. I know. But here's the thing: governments can vastly fetter the entire cryptocurrency space, and they can do it in two ways. Number one, what they can do is they could shut down all the exchanges. And if you shut down the exchanges, all of the liquidity, or most of the liquidity associated with cryptocurrencies, goes down the toilet. Okay, so there's no price transparency, and you don't know what your Bitcoin is worth, and you can't readily exchange it. That's number one, and they can do that. Number two is that governments could make any transaction using Bitcoin illicit, or any cryptocurrency illicit. In order to, say, have a mass adoption of a cryptocurrency, I have to go on a computer and go to a third-party website, which would have a visible application, which is visible to myself and to a regulatory body. So Best Buy and Amazon and any e-tailer is not going to accept cryptocurrencies if they become illegal. Therefore, transactions using Bitcoin, and I'm going to just use Bitcoin instead of cryptocurrencies from now on, because this is what Safe Dean says is the only one that's not a shitcoin, according to what he says. So if Bitcoin is made illegal and the currency exchanges are shut down, Bitcoin becomes relegated to the dark web. And the dark web, by its nature, is anonymous. So websites are anonymous and you are anonymous. Therefore, when you trust somebody to send your Bitcoin over the internet, you don't know if the good or service is going to arrive. And if it does not arrive, there is no call center, insurance, or safeguard to redeem or reverse the process. So this is where you come out. You have Bitcoin, which is struggling to become money, and I don't think it's money because it's not, it's certainly not rare, and it's certainly not indestructible. And we could talk about that later, about an EMP bomb or a solar flare that takes down the grid. But certainly you have to admit to me that it's not a very good currency. It's not very good money, and the government can't shut it down. You need a government to sanction its use. And if a government sanctions its use, then its purpose becomes null and void because it's no longer immutable, it's no longer anonymous, and it's no longer decentralized.
Okay, so first of all, when you say, you know, Bitcoin is trying, our Bitcoiners or the Bitcoin community are trying, that's that really is a misunderstanding of how what Bitcoin really is. It's like you're saying, you know, the internet is trying to do this or the internet is trying to do that. There's no will to Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a piece of software, and I think, you know, it's good for people to start thinking about it as being a good piece of open source software. If you think about it today, you know, you might use Apple or Windows, but the majority of the computer processes on your phone and on your laptop and on everything that you deal with when you go to the train station or the airport or the airplane, the majority of software is open source software that is available and a product of this open source movement. And most people who don't follow software don't realize just how much of our life is reliant on open source software that's available out there. Bitcoin is like that. So Bitcoin is a piece of open source software that's available for anybody in the world to use it. And so it makes no sense to talk about a Bitcoin community or to talk about Bitcoiners or about Bitcoin. And that's really a big part of the appeal. That is the entire appeal of the whole thing, that it's just a neutral thing that anybody can use. Because, you know, the whole point of the technology is that it's a way of transferring value that doesn't depend on a third party, and so that it can't be stopped. So
you're, and this is something I listen, I don't know everything. So I'm glad that you're, I'm so yeah. happy that we have this. So you're saying that Bitcoin Gold, Bitcoin Cash are zero, worthless.
Yeah.
As well as Ethereum, Litecoin, all these other coins are completely worthless.
Yes.
I mean, I have never heard anybody else take that stance, and I'm happy to hear.
Yeah, it's sad that for, you know, for us old time Bitcoiners, well, not really old time, but, you know, people who are just in it for the Bitcoin, you know, this flood of all the shit coins has just made us all look like we're a bunch of gamblers. And really, like, there are a bunch of hardcore Bitcoiners. A lot of us are gamblers in many ways, but, you know, there's also a perspective on this as an open source software thing that is just a technical solution to the problem of central banks. Like, we're just going to get rid of this disaster that is called central banking that we have around the world, all the monetary central planning of it, and turn it into a piece of open source software. Instead of having a few thousand PhDs in economics ruining the planet with their...
Amen, brother. Amen.
That's the plan. And if one of them is going to do it, it's going to be Bitcoin, because all the others will never give us autonomous software that runs those things. They're all going to give us software that somebody controls. So you're back to the political problem of central banking, which is what we're trying to solve here. So from this regard, on the issue of governments shutting it down, the thing is, once you understand this as being the function of Bitcoin, and this is really the comparative advantage of Bitcoin, and of course, a big part of Bitcoin's value may be down to just people speculating for short-term gains on it. However, that's kind of part of Bitcoin's appeal. But Bitcoin's appeal as a general sort of tool to get around censorship, financial censorship and censorship resistance, lies precisely in the extent of financial restrictions that governments around the world are placing. In other words, the more financial restrictions they place on any kind of economic activity anywhere, the more you're going to get demand for Bitcoin. So capital controls in Argentina are going to make Argentinians begin to look into Bitcoin. Venezuelan hyperinflation is going to make Venezuelans look into Bitcoin. So the worse the monetary policy is, the worse the capital controls, the bank controls around the world, the more people will go to Bitcoin. And so
why not gold? Why not gold though, Safe D? Why,
no,
why not
of course, gold?
Why not a, and why not a gold-backed cryptocurrency? Wouldn't that solve all of our problems?
I think the only real, the most serious threat to Bitcoin is a gold standard. Like, this is the counterpoint that I was going to make. Like, if governments really wanted to stop Bitcoin, they shouldn't ban it or make it illegal. Because if they do all of those things, they're just advertising Bitcoin to the world. They're telling the world, hey, by the way, you know that money that you think is yours in the bank account? Yeah, you can't use it to buy magic internet money because I say so. Well, that sounds like an advertisement for everybody in the world to go out and buy Bitcoin and get some part of their money in something that the government can confiscate. Because then, you know, with Bitcoin, you can have that money, you can send it around the world, and the government can't stop it. So if they do this, it increases the demand for Bitcoin. If they switch to a gold standard, on the other hand, if we go back to a free market in banking, if banks are free to offer people complete privacy as they used to back at some point in time, then I think that would severely undermine the demand for Bitcoin. So for me, you know, if you think monetary policy is going to improve, you probably should short Bitcoin. But if not, I mean, it's going
the other direction.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is a turbocharged on steroids bet on the opposite direction, because, you know, hyperinflation strikes any country in the world. And that leads to a few thousand dollars going into Bitcoin, if maybe a few million dollars going into Bitcoin. And that's kind of, you know, leads to an increase in the demand for it and keeps the thing running and makes it more attractive. But because the supply is limited, it continues to attract more and more people.
One thing about gold that I think is better than Bitcoin as well is that gold will hold its value over thousands of years. Of course, you don't have that history yet, so that's not a fair jab at Bitcoin. But gold will hold its value even in high inflation or maybe intractable inflation. All inflations, gold will hold its value. But only during like a Venezuelan hyperinflation do people want to make that big jump in mass to a Bitcoin.
Could be, but I think, Bitcoin is obviously going to be much more volatile than gold. And I think, you know, I still don't think gold is toast, and I don't share the hubris of many Bitcoiners who think that gold is done. Don't write off the old analog Bitcoin just yet. You know, it might still because I think, you know, in my research bulletin, my subscription research bulletin, the previous one was titled "How to Really Kill Bitcoin," and I think there's two threat scenarios that I think are serious for Bitcoin. The first is governments implementing a gold standard, and the second would be, ironically enough, is in a situation of hyperinflation, if government monies collapse, we have, you know, just suppose hypothetically speaking, we witness a complete collapse of government monies around the world. In that kind of scenario, unless Bitcoin has grown massively over the next, until that stuff happens, unless Bitcoin has grown to, I would say, at least 20, 50x of where it is right now, then it's going to have a global liquidity that is far smaller than that of gold. And if governments are out of the money and gold business, and there's, there's a return to a free market in money, and people are able to set up markets that are relatively free without government control, I think in that kind of world, gold with a larger liquidity might just continue to dominate as money, because ultimately Bitcoin's only comparative advantage over gold is that it gets around governments. You said it at the beginning of the interview, Michael, you're absolutely correct. This is where Bitcoin is superior to gold. Bitcoin has tens of thousands of nodes around the world, and it's almost impossible to shut down. And we could, you know, you could read in my book, I get into it in detail.
Right.
It's not easy to shut it down. It's definitely far harder than gold, because with gold clearance, you have to centralize the clearance in central locations around the country, and that makes it very easy for governments to take it over. So if you got rid of the threat of government, hypothetically speaking, because governments no longer have their own currencies to defend, I think in that world, unless Bitcoin continues to grow at a very fast rate until then in that kind of world, I think gold would still maintain a monetary role.
I have another. Phil, you want to jump in here? You haven't.
No, man. When you get two smart guys like yourself, I just want to keep it going. Keep
you're
going.
You're just sitting back and going for the ride. All right. Well, I want to ask Saifedean a question where I also think gold has a tremendous advantage is in the catastrophe scenario where the internet goes down, the grid goes down, North Korea is threatened to launch an EMP bomb. There are solar flares. The very, very rare instances, a chance of the solar flares, maybe 1% every, year. Or maybe even less. But in that case, wouldn't you rather have you say gold also can be confiscated by the government because it's real, it exists, it's tangible. It's a detriment, but it's also an advantage. So in the case of an EMP or a solar flare, atomic strike, grid goes down, wouldn't you rather have a physical precious metal rather than a wallet in your hard drive? Which is not going to be very good for transaction.
In that scenario, I'd rather have a lot of things, and those two would definitely be up there. But I think people kind of underestimate how resilient and how light Bitcoin is. So yes, it is an enormous amount of value, but it's an actually astonishing amount, astonishingly small amount of data and infrastructure that is needed for it. So there's no actual single building anywhere in the world that is needed for Bitcoin to operate. There's no single anything in the world that is essential for Bitcoin's operation, anyone or anything that is indispensable.
It needs electricity though, right? It needs electricity to function.
Well, but the thing is, like, electricity,
no?
I mean, to operate the machines, but I mean, electricity is not something that needs a grid. The thing is, you can generate electricity anywhere in the world with any generator or a solar panel or a wind turbine or a water turbine. So effectively, the idea that there's some sort of switch that can be flicked off is really a function of, you know, 1970s government.
But that takes time. I mean,
propaganda.
First of all, you couldn't. Okay, that would be a local grid that you created, sending Bitcoin all over the world.
But the thing is, all that you need to link to the Bitcoin network is a device that can send, that can receive about 1 or 2 megabytes of data every 10 minutes. And so these devices, they, you know, there's billions of them around the world. Your smartphone can do that. A radio can do that. There are all these new antennas that can do that. So you can get devices with very little power requirement that can run for many days without power. And you can always generate power from all sorts of different sources. So the idea that we're going to get to a point where, you know, where people can't have any of these tens of billions of devices that exist around the world being able to operate, if we get to that point, you know, we're already past the point where Bitcoin or gold or anything matters. You know, it's become such an integral part of our life that we have all of this equipment and all these machinery that's running around, that really the scenario by which Bitcoin dies, by which people are unable to join Bitcoin if they want to, and that's really the key thing. As long as people want to join Bitcoin, they will.
There's a time factor there, so it takes time to build a grid. I mean, you have to agree with that.
No, but you don't need a grid. Like, you need a couple of hundred devices around the world. Not even a couple of hundred. You need really literally 2 devices around the world that are interested in making the next block, and then in the next 10 minutes they can announce the next block. So literally 2 devices around the world. If 2 people want to connect with one another through devices, whatever device, they could.
Well, how would you send the Bitcoin then? If I'm in Canada.
Well,
and I want to send a Bitcoin to Lebanon, but the worldwide grid's been knocked down. How are you going to transmit one to the other?
As long as the 2 machines can connect with one another,
they can
connect.
But how would they connect?
They have to go through a satellite.
They have to go through a very extensive line of cables that don't exist anymore.
But the thing is, with Bitcoin, you have such an enormous number of options through which they can be transmitted, that the notion that all of these things can be switched off at the same time becomes a little bit untenable. You know, you can just use radio waves to transmit the block.
It would be a disaster situation.
Yes, but it also
has that advantage.
But it would be a point at which I think, you know, you know, 1 megabyte of data is nothing. Like, this phone call is using up gigabytes of data from our collective computers at this point. So, you know, this takes up more data to do than the entire Bitcoin network maybe sends in maybe a couple of weeks or something like that, you know? So I'm trying to tell you that the technical capability that is required is at some level, it becomes a little bit as much as thinking that, you know, we're going to have much bigger problems if we can't run. If we want to run Bitcoin, we will be able to run Bitcoin. If we can't run Bitcoin, you know, it doesn't even matter anymore.
So finally, and this is what I think is happening. I think the government is allowing cryptocurrencies a lot of rope to hang themselves. Because I know governments do not like to have competing currencies, as I mentioned before. So what I think is going to happen is, I think the world is headed for negative interest rates. It's already evident in Europe and in Japan. I think they're coming to the United States. I think interest rate suppression is going to become so pervasive around the world that banks are going to have to offer you a negative rate on your deposits. This is going somewhere, so just give me a couple of seconds to make my point, please. So if banks offer a negative rate on your deposits, there would be a run on the bank if you still had physical cash. nobody would leave their deposit in a bank when they could stuff it under the mattress, unless you had, you know, many, many millions of dollars that couldn't be, you know, large bills were banned. So banks can't have a run on their deposits because then they become insolvent. They have nothing to lend. So what I believe is happening is we're going to go eventually to a Fed coin. I was one of the first people to postulate this. So a government-backed cryptocurrency on a private blockchain. And JP Morgan even came out with their own, floated the idea of having their own cryptocurrency. Jamie Dimon, after hating cryptocurrency, says, hey, you know what, maybe we should do this. So in what regard would the banking system or government coming up with their own blockchain, so they make cryptocurrencies illegal, and then people accept, the public accepts the electronic form of money because interest rates are negative. So all you could do is keep your money in the bank and lose nominal principal, or spend your money and getting the velocity going and creating inflation, because that's what all central banks want is inflation. I mean, God help us, but that's what they want. So what would happen to Bitcoin in that regard, I believe, would be relegated solely to the dark web, where it would still have its value, but the mass adaptation of Bitcoin wouldn't be there, because the government would be channeling you and forcing you into their private blockchain network.
So they tried in the Soviet Union back in the 1980s. Or 60s or whatever, they tried to stop people from wearing jeans because that was an imperialist ploy or something like that. You know how that worked out? People are wearing jeans all over Russia today, and the Soviet Union's long gone. The point is, economic incentives are not things that you can just ban. If governments were to actually ban Bitcoin, yes, it would be relegated to the dark web, but the government would also be relegating a significant chunk of real economic activity to the dark web. A lot of people that are using the banking system right now and using the current financial instruments, because they allow us some margin of freedom, once they become more and more restrictive, more and more economic activity will switch towards Bitcoin, which is going to be massively bullish for Bitcoin. And so effectively, the way that I see it, if Bitcoin is going to triumph, I don't see the hyperinflation scenario as being a good one, as most people think of it. If we get hyperinflation, we'll probably go back to gold. Bitcoin doesn't have the liquidity to win yet. I think the best thing that can happen is that we continue with this slow bleed of governments playing this, regulatory dance around Bitcoin, not knowing what to do. And as time goes on, it continues to operate safely. It continues to gain more and more acceptance, and the value continues to go up. It becomes more and more attractive, and more people get into it. But the notion that there's anything new about government digital currencies is not real, because, you know, all that they do is the same thing that is done.
Could we talk about that? I'm sorry, before we end up, I just want to ask Saifedean one more question. Is Bitcoin becoming more and more popular because the Chicago Board's option exchange just canceled future contracts because of lack of interest? The price of Bitcoin went from 20,000 to... And I'm not being argumentative. I'm just saying... Actually, if you're correct that Bitcoin's number is 21 million and the forks don't count and they can be made immutable, I mean, you have a very viable point. I've never heard that before, in all honesty, that all these other cryptocurrencies are shit coins, to use your term of endearment. But that would be a great point, a great favor for Bitcoin. But the transaction volume is falling, the interest in futures contracts are falling.
To the peak. Basically, but if you look at the trend over the 10 years, I mean, yeah, there's been a dip over the last year or so, but over the last 10 years, it's up in the millions of percent in every conceivable metric. It just continues to go up.
But the second derivative, though, is falling. You have to agree with that.
Well, it depends on where you start calculating it. So, I mean, overall, in 10 years, it's up about 400 million, 40 million percent in 10
from,
years.
From December of 2017.
It's down about 80% or so.
Okay. So what would account, in your mind, since you're saying that it's growing in popularity, the second derivative is falling precipitously, that kind of, and I'm going back, I'm not cherry picking data, December 2017 was, a year and a half ago. Why in the last year and a half has the desire to use this cryptocurrency waning?
Oh, I think it's just essentially a speculative market bubble where supply and market, demand dynamics change, and then you get a hype cycle going, and then people start weighing in, and then you get, easy money speculators and people trading on margin coming in. And so, you have a lot of weak hands, and so the price is being pushed very quickly. And then something happens that brings the price down. I think in the case of 2017, it was that one of the bankruptcy of Mt. Gox, they sold a whole bunch of the Bitcoins. May have been that, or may have been something else, but that dropped the price. And so then when the price drops, that wipes out a lot of the speculators, and then the whole thing comes crashing down, and then people exit. So you have the same kind of hype cycle. But the thing that is interesting about Bitcoin is that there's nothing new about this for people who have seen Bitcoin. If you look at the data, you look at the chart, you only see that it went up and then went down. But if you scroll backwards, you see that this pattern has repeated itself over the last 10 years many times. And if you look at the logarithmic chart, you see that it's just always, constantly going up but crashing. But the interesting thing is that when it crashes down, it still crashes at many multiples higher than its original price levels.
Is that
That's
it's not
when
very not a very good argument for a store of value or a currency, though, is it?
Well, but I mean, it is, you would not go into bootstrap real economic value by diktat. If you could just give it value like that, it would be a shitcoin. It would be a fiat central bank coin. But this is winning its value on the market. So it's winning its value because people are using it as a store of value because its supply is limited. But of course, the rate at which they use it and adopt it varies. And so its price is much more volatile. But as more and more people put money into it, if we get to a point where it has, say, half the market cap of gold, then I think the price is going to be very, very stable. So we'll see.
Well, I think we're on borrowed time with both of you gentlemen. Thanks for being so generous.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun.
Bill, thank you for being such a great host.
Yeah, no problem. It was you made my job real easy. I'll share just one last story to wrap up here. I lost a bet with a Peter Schiff fan. He said, "Phil, Bitcoin is going to zero." I said, "It's not only not going to zero, sir, it's not falling under 5,000." When it fell under 5,000, he came to collect. We had bet a silver coin. I said, "You're right. I owe you a silver coin. What's your address?" And it turns out he lives in the UK. So I had to go to the Royal Mint and figure out all the AML and KYC. And I said, "You know what? I'll tell you what. Do you have a Bitcoin wallet? I'll just send you the same amount. In fact, I'll send you
Sure.
double of Bitcoin." And he said, "I don't know how to do that." So that's why we're doing this. This debate is going to continue. I don't see Bitcoin going away, and we need to continue to learn about it. I've got links to both of your books. I think March 20th, 2019 will be a day that lives in infamy when the Fed ultimately reversed course. So Michael's book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse, is more relevant than ever. And even if you hate Bitcoin, and you love gold, I will assure you that you'll still love Saifedean's book. I mean, look, it's got gold right on the cover. So most of it is about the history of money, and I think we can all learn from that. Follow me on Twitter. The Twitter poll that will follow this episode: who was more convincing? I made the mistake in the silver debate to put that out beforehand, and I had people saying David Morgan won before the debate even started. So take that poll afterward, and I'll also put a video of Trace Mera from a previous interview over here. I'll put the subscribe button here, and if you want to check out the KF store, then click that link down there in the middle. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on Kennedy Financial.
Thanks
Thank you
so
both
much,
very
Bill.
much.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you,
Take
safety,
care.
and thank you.